From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 12th day of January 2026. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about this morning's reports with Kurt Kimmel of AgMarket.net. We'll check the agricultural news for the afternoon, and of course, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. We'll do that with Mark Russo of Everstream Analytics on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled 24¼ cents lower at $4.21½. The May at $4.30½, down 23¼. In December, down 12½ cents at $4.51½. The March beans at $10.49, down 13½ cents. May at $10.61¾, down 12¾. In November, soybeans down 4¾ of a cent. Settlement price there at $10.67. Bean meal down $5.40. Bean oil up 58 cents. Wheat futures down 6 at $5.11¼ in the March. In the soft red, the hard red at down 3½ at $5.26¾ of a cent. This morning, the United States Department of Agriculture released the final crop production figures for the 2025-26 growing season for corn, soybeans, and there was also some wheat acreage numbers, the grain stocks figures, a couple of other things, too. Joe Jansen, agricultural economist from the U of I and part of the Farm Doc team, now joins us to talk about what was obviously a report that very few, if any, people expected to show. An increase in acreage and yield, particularly for corn. Can you talk about the numbers that USDA released this morning?
Yeah, I think the big surprise today was the crop production numbers for 2025 that came out from the National Ag Statistics Service, showing, you know, when a reduction in crop size was expected, both for corn and soybeans, instead showing an increase that we saw, you know, more corn harvested acres. 91.3 million acres of corn harvested. That's sort of a slightly smaller decline than normal in terms of the decline from planted to harvested acres. And then rather than decreasing their yield estimate for corn as many people expected, a lot of people thought that yield estimate was going to come down as much as two to four bushels per acre, instead increasing it by half a bushel per acre. So the overall effect was, you know, this is going to be the biggest corn crop in U.S. history, now over 17 billion bushels of corn harvested in 2025 in the United States. And obviously the effect on market prices is not positive. The corn market has taken the news pretty hard, dropping about 15 cents here on old crop pricing.
So total production up 269 million bushels. They did add 100 million bushels of usage to feed and residual, which I doubt many would have expected. I don't know if anybody will believe either. What do you think about that number?
Yeah, I think that, and again, it's hard to tell because that feed and residual category kind of encompasses a lot of uncertainty. We don't get, you know, objective measurement of feed use in the United States, so it's kind of this leftover number. But a lot of people expected that, you know, with a decline in production, we'd see a decline in that number, that number was overestimated. And now with this huge crop, kind of some of the excess is going into that category to kind of just, you know, work the balance sheet out. But I think there's a lot of uncertainty about what feed usage might be in the United States. We're not seeing, obviously, a massive surge in, you know, livestock numbers that would justify, you know, a bigger number there, but all of this corn has to go somewhere on the balance sheet. That's one of the places that it tends to go, at least until we get a better sense of this usage for the 2025 crop.
So what really matters is the ending stocks. We were at 2.02 billion bushels. Now we're at 2.22 billion bushels, really 2.23. And we have a stocks to use ratio, I think, of about 13.6. That's a number that doesn't bode well going into the end of the marketing year.
No, it just means this market is pretty amply supplied. And all of these kind of, all of the data that we got today kind of points in the same direction. We did get a December 1 grain stocks estimate as well that showed, you know, as of December 1st, sort of immediately after harvest, we had about 13.28 billion bushels of corn in storage. That compares to about 12 billion bushels a year ago, and about a billion bushels more sitting on farm relative to a year ago. So all of that kind of, again, pointing to, you know, an amply supplied market, and a corn price that to ration that has to be down in this, in where we're at in this kind of low fours on the board.
For soybeans, not as many changes, but still changes that made a difference to the marketplace and increased total production. Give me some of the numbers you've been watching.
Yeah, I think, you know, smaller changes to U.S. production. So there's more soybeans around, but all of the changes were smaller. And the U.S. soybean balance sheet is, you know, not exactly, you know, amply supplied, or there's, you know, a ton of soybeans sitting around. But in the context of the global supply picture, these increases in U.S. production were coupled with an increase in the estimate for Brazil's production that they've just now started to harvest here in January. So the USDA added 3 million metric tons to Brazilian production. I think there's people saying that number could go even higher. We've just seen, you know, relatively favorable weather, no real weather issues in South America in the last couple of months. And that means that number's has gone up. So, you know, maybe there wasn't sort of this like big change in U.S. soybean production estimates, but in the context of the global supply and demand picture, it's just, you know, an amply supplied market as well on the soybean side. We've seen the soybean market come off here a little bit, not quite as much as for corn, but we have seen, you know, the bean market drop about 10 cents here since the report was released.
Yeah, so they added 9 million bushels to total soybean production, which isn't very much when you're looking at a 4.262 billion bushel crop to begin with. Mm-hmm. However, the place that they did make a change was in the exports, something we have talked about as it's related to China, down 60 million bushels to 1.575 billion. And that 60 just transitioned right into the ending stocks, going from 290 million bushels to 350 million bushels. And that also translated from USDA's perspective into a lower season's average cash price, down 30 cents this month from the last month.
Yeah, it certainly seems like USDA, in a sense, wanted a do-over on their December soybean price estimate. That 1050 season's average cash price estimate kind of reflected that big surge in soybean prices that we saw through November. And since the market's come off, USDA has kind of, you know, reduced that season's average cash price estimate. But I think the overall picture is, again, you know, that demand for U.S. soybeans is not particularly strong because of the state of the global soybean balance sheet. And that's what's reflected in USDA's numbers today.
Generally speaking, Joe, when these numbers come out in January, we think about them as setting the tone through the prospective plantings report, which comes out at the end of March. How much of an impact does this have?
I think the impact is pretty significant. I think this kind of, in a sense, perhaps puts a ceiling on any potential price rally that we might have seen. Now, to generate such a rally, we'd probably need some production issues in South America, because that sort of is the big kind of outstanding wild card in the next couple of months. But this kind of, again, puts a damper on all of that, just because of the well-supplied nature of the global marketplace today.
Thank you much. I appreciate the time you took with us today.
Thank you, John.
Joe Janson is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. Now let's turn our attention directly to the commodity markets themselves and trade in Chicago. Kurt Kimmel is here. He is with agmarket.net. Hello, Kurt. Thank you. I bet it was kind of a long day for you, starting at 11 a.m. Central.
Boy, it was doing good till 11 a.m. And all of a sudden, the fire horse did not show any fire and doused with some water. And the fund rebalancing of funds coming in buying corn did not show up, at least today. So, yes, it was a kind of a brutal day. I was fairly optimistic the market would hold in there, but that was not the case. The trade was a shocker with ending stocks being raised up to 198 million bushels. Big surprise is the increase in corn yield by a half a bushel. Most analysts was looking at a little bit of reduction in yield from the standpoint we were watching crop tours take place, and particularly Western Iowa participants coming out covered in orange, and even reports of harvest yields reflecting some lower yields there just did not happen on this report. Of course, the bean carryout, they went ahead and lowered the demand by 60 million bushels, and so therefore on exports, so therefore carry out up over 350 million bushels. So grain stocks report a little higher than expected. So we have plenty of inventory here near term. On the technical picture, the corn, March corn, was trading in a sideways pattern here for the last 2.5 months for fairly good support at 435, resistance up around 355. The market moving below this 435, 455. The market below, moving below this 435, opens the door to going down and maybe test that August low at 410. So fairly negative, moving below that sideways congestion pattern that we've seen here for the last 2.5 months' time.
It appears everybody put their acreage in for the bridge payment at the end of December and gave yields as well, and so that changed things a lot. We have to look forward to the prospective planting report. It is 3 months out, but as we talked with Joe Jansen, this next 3 months usually is given its tone by today's announcements from USDA. Does this mean we have a sideways to lower marketplace looking forward, or how do you see it developing over time?
As far as price goes, it's going to be awful hard to get something bullish to the upside. The South American forecast is leaning to the drier side. We are seeing the Brazilian and Argentina forecast starting to be eager to push fast forward to see some rains do develop. We're in there entering their major crop development. There will be some early harvest activity take place, but it's a long drawn out harvest. But also Southern Hemisphere, they're going to be quite a bit cheaper here. So the trade's looking for most of the demand to move to the Southern Hemisphere. And two, on the supply demand balance sheet in the world situation, there's just ideas that China won't be any hurry at all coming forward to buy additional beans, particularly at 25 million metric tons, once they complete the nearby commitment of 12 million metric tons. So we got supply, the demand's still kind of questionable, and we got even more world supply of grain coming on the market here as we move into this spring.
USDA did increase production size for the soybeans as well, though it was just 9 million bushels. They did, however, take 60 million bushels out of the exports. Those got transitioned right into the ending stock, so that went up 60 million bushels from 290 to 350 million bushels. They dropped the season's average cash price by 30 cents. The marketplace seemed to take that fairly well, though.
Yeah, right. It'd be nice if we could stay below 300 million bushels, but for some reason, this bean market continues to hang in there much better than expected. The March beans finished the day at 10.49. You know, if a large supply of beans, you'd think we'd be below 10 bucks, which could happen here if we don't see demand continue to come forward here on a timely fashion. So there's a lot of market in front of us. We'll see how the demand picture unfolds here, particularly in corn with this lower going here. That's a function of the market to move lower to stimulate some demand. There will probably be a little follow through selling interest take place. So we should be hopefully in a position here to have some type of dead cat bounce here to give us some opportunities to get caught from some cash sales.
You hoping for a turnaround Tuesday then tomorrow?
Well, I need to call Wayne up this afternoon and order that. Yes, sir.
Indeed. Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
You bet. Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this USDA Report Day. In today's agricultural news, we'll start in Washington, D.C., where President Trump has not yet endorsed year-round E15 legislation, something one supporter argues could finally make such sales a reality and dramatically improve farmers' fortunes. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, of course, says Trump's support for year-round E15 sales could be a legislative game-changer. The president asked an Iowa corn grower about the importance of greenlighting summertime E15 sales at Trump's recent announcement of Farm Aid.
E15 is a big deal.
E15 is a great deal, year-round.
Grassley was asked about the president's uncertainty during a press call last Thursday.
I want you to know that I'm in regular contact with the White House on the importance of E15. In fact, I'll have an opportunity before the day's over to talk to people that are high up advising the President of the United States on these issues.
Grassley says he's been told year-round E15 sales would add about $14 billion to farmer income, compared with the $12 billion in the just-approved bridge payment, Farmer Aid. And as uncertainty lingers over the administration's support for another tranche of aid before improved support prices kick in next fall. As for a legislative solution, Grassley, he's not in favor.
I think it would have to ride on some other bill to get done, and it should ride on another bill. We shouldn't have to spend a single minute talk about E15 and the floor of the United States Senate. We shouldn't have to worry about getting 60 votes to get it up and all that sort of stuff.
Again, that was Iowa U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., where agricultural policy analysts say 2026 could mark the end of traditional five-year U.S. farm bills as lawmakers struggle to produce comprehensive legislation. The most recent farm bill provisions expired in 2023, and Congress has extended them annually since, leaving perennial programs in limbo. Experts say shifting political priorities and partisan divides have complicated efforts to craft a broad farm policy package that addresses commodity supports, conservation, nutrition, and rural development. And without a full farm bill, many programs are funded through short-term fixes, delaying long-term planning for producers. Agricultural advocates warn that prolonged uncertainty could impact crop insurance, disaster assistance, and trade programs. Some lawmakers are calling for scaled-down legislation focusing on critical elements, while stakeholders stress the need for stability in federal agricultural policy. And finally today, global food prices have dipped, but 2025 still shows year-over-year gains, that according to the UN. World food prices fell for the fourth consecutive month in December, but overall 2025 food costs remained higher than the previous year, reports the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization. The FAO's Food Price Index, which tracks a basket of key commodities, dropped its lowest points since January 2025, reflecting easing cost pressures for staples as markets adjusted. Dairy prices led the December decline with a 4.4% drop, driven by the increased cream availability in Europe, while meat and cereal prices also pulled back slightly from earlier highs. Despite the recent declines, prices for many categories remained elevated for the full year, dairy up more than 13%. Meat up about 5% compared to 2024. Vegetable oil prices stayed at multi-year highs amid tight supplies, and cereal prices rose modestly on concerns over Black Sea export constraints. The FAO says ongoing geopolitical instability and strong global demand continue to influence markets. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. Let's take a quick look at the weather forecast on this Monday afternoon. Mark Russo is here. He is with Everstream Analytics. Hello, Mark. Thanks for being with us.
Hello there, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Let's start here in the United States. January has been kind of warm. Is it going to stay that way?
It does look to stay that way for a few more days. This milder pattern and generally zonal or west to east jet stream flow is going to keep things mild for another 3 to 4 days. After that, though, things do look to change, and a return of Arctic air here into the Midwest and for much of the northern and eastern U.S. is expected.
Can you Tell me about snow across the Midwest and what it looks like this year in comparison to previous years.
Yeah, so far this winter season, there's been a snow surplus in and around the Midwest, especially around the Great Lakes and on into the Northeast. But outside of that, though, it's been a snow deficit. Much of the Western U.S., into the southern U.S., although their normals in the southern U.S. are very low, but the abundance of snow has really been focused on the Midwest and Great Lakes, especially the northern portion of the Midwest.
Just a division in temperature, or is there precipitation changes in that mix as well?
Primarily just from a snow standpoint. When you factor in rain, it's been a bit more mixed. In general, the northern U.S. has been more active with liquid precipitation. But then down south, it's actually been the polar opposite. It's been really dry across much of the southern U.S., from the southern plains all the way eastward to the southeast ag belts.
When the Arctic air comes in, how cold will it be and where will it land mostly?
Yeah, right now the Arctic cold does not look overly extreme here, but it is going to be directed primarily from, call it the northern plains through the Midwest on into the Northeast. And temperatures here right now, it doesn't appear that here in Illinois will be dropping below zero Fahrenheit, but certainly getting into at least more minimum temperatures in the teens, maybe a few mornings coming up this weekend and next week in the single digits. But right now, the Arctic cold does not look overly extreme.
Does that change come with snowfall as well or not?
Not that much snow is on the horizon. There will likely come from a computer model guidance standpoint. Models are not suggesting any kind of big winter storms, but it looks like in this type of pattern, you could get into some clippers at times. And so that's going to be something to watch, primarily across the northern and eastern Midwest. But right now, at least no big winter storms for the next 10 days.
Are there things you're watching in South America that might be of concern to the crops?
No big concerns right now across any portion of South America. The only thing that we're watching is the drier southern acreage within Argentina, namely Buenos Aires and La Pampa, where soil moisture has been in a decline. There are some minor opportunities for improvement coming up, but we're not seeing a pattern that would allow for major replenishment in soil moisture. And from a temperature standpoint, especially for any corn going through pollination over the next couple of weeks, there's no sustained or extreme heat waves, but temperatures will be marginally above normal on several days. So that combined with the soil moisture situation likely start to increase crop stress across the southern belt, but you're not talking about anything overly extreme right now.
Thank you much. We'll talk with you again next week.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois. Public media online on demand at willag.org, willag.org, or search it out by name, Closing Market Report, in your favorite podcast applications. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.